Hello, party people, and welcome to Office Hours out on the road. That sign back behind me designates the last spike, which was the last spike driven into a railroad track joining Los Angeles over that way and Utah behind me. This was long before Las Vegas was a thing. And the existence of this railroad really helped turn Las Vegas, first that started Las Vegas period, because there was water in that valley, and then ended up becoming a city and becoming the monster that it is today. It's called the Last Spike, although there are several last spikes that join together different railroads going across the United States. This one's not particularly ceremonious. It's just that I was looking for a place to go drive this thing this morning, and I'm always looking for excuses to drive it. It's a winter in Las Vegas, so it was about 37 Fahrenheit when I woke up this morning. It's, I think, 40, 45 now, which is great weather to drive this thing around, which, of course, has no air conditioning in it. This is my 1964 Porsche 356 SC little hot rod that goes way faster than anything without seatbelts should be allowed to go. It's tons of fun, but I don't usually drive it when Eve is in town, or when Eve is around, because it does smell like gasoline and vibrates a lot. You know, it's loud. It's a 1960s car. Eve is like, I don't want to go somewhere and then arrive smelling like gasoline. So let's go through your top voted questions from PollGab. The top voted question is from Jan DeGroff, who says, our database landscape seems CPU bound. We sometimes hit 100% CPU with organic load. We're considering new hardware. Let me stop you right there. Never judge SQL Server by metrics anything other than wait stats. Like I teach you in my mastering server tuning class, wait stats is what SQL Server constantly tracks what it's waiting on. Now, just because it's hitting 100% CPU does not necessarily mean that you're, well, when you hit 100%, it probably is, but as you're starting to approach it, that does not mean that CPU is the biggest bottleneck at that time. You may have other bottlenecks leading up to it, which cause CPU to go higher, but don't believe anything just based on external metrics like perfmon counters. John says, we're considering new hardware. Do you think memory speed plays a significant role, as in 4800 versus 6400? No, you're overthinking it big time. Look at wait stats and then go from there. And I teach you how to do that in the mastering server tuning class. I have never seen a server where choosing between memory speeds is what made me pick a processor. Now, it's fine to get the fastest memory you can get. That's totally cool. But if you're CPU bottlenecked, you want the fastest cores you can get and the most of them. You don't want, don't go looking at memory speed, because it's just going to distract you with the decision that you need to make there. But I'm glad you're overthinking it, because that's kind of cool. Because once you make that decision on what CPUs you buy, it's not like you have an easy change, an easy backout process there. So I respect that. Next up, Worried asks, my SQL Server database had CRC errors and CheckDB corruption with no good backups. Copy database wizard failed, so we finally scripted out the schema and data and imported it into a new database. Is there a better or safer way to recover in this situation? So, of course, every thing with corruption is different. My first concern would be if you were trying to recover on the same machine that was having the storage corruption to begin with. You know how you see in horror movies? Horror, H-O-R-R-O-R. You see in, I don't know what kind of movies you watch, but I'm talking about horror movies here. In horror movies, you know, there's always, and it's always a white guy. The white guy is like, I heard that noise. I see a trail of blood. We should go investigate further. Always a white dude. It just always is. It's never a woman. It's never another ethnicity. It's always a white dude. And I'm not complaining, because we probably are that stupid, but yeah, get out of the house. Get out of that haunted house. Go somewhere else. If you're having corruption, it's either because there's a hardware or storage problem, or because there's a SQL Server bug, so you want to get out of there as quickly as possible. So the first thing that I would have done is stop SQL Server, copy the data and log files somewhere else, and then begin your troubleshooting there and see if you can recover it from that point. Now, if you want to learn more about different techniques, because you also said, was that the only technique or are there other techniques? There are lots of techniques. Other techniques, the best way to learn about them, if you're doing this for fun, is to go Google for Steve Stedman, S-T-E-D-M-A-N, Steve Stedman Database Corruption Challenge. And it was, 8 or 10 weeks long, and every week he gives you a different corrupt database to go play with. And then shows it after that week, he shows here's the different ways that different readers try to recover data. I went through that. I had a ton of fun. And I say this is like you learn it for curiosity, because if you think you're going to become a corruption expert, I'd first step back and say, why are you having so much corruption? You probably want to deal with that root cause. And when you are under the gun for corruption, probably one of the first things that I would do would be to call Microsoft, or for that matter, Steve Stedman, because the guy specializes in database corruption repair. I don't know if it's the bulk of his business or not, but it's certainly not mine. I don't do a lot of database corruption repair. Because I'm usually booked like several weeks in advance, and so nobody wants to wait several weeks to get their corruption repaired. Go figure. Elwood Blues says, what is your opinion of SQL database in Microsoft Fabric? My first reaction would be just Fabric, period. If you want to learn what's going on with Fabric, go to the Microsoft subreddit for Microsoft Fabric. And just start reading through the top posts from this month. Use with Reddit, you can hit the drop down for top and then this month. Go look at the top posts from this month, and if that doesn't discourage you, and you can look at it at any time, if that doesn't discourage you from using Fabric, I don't know what will. As I record this morning, Fabric is having yet another outage that was a global issue. Started out in Norway and then it spread over to other places. I don't know why anybody would use this thing other than the fact that you get it for free from Microsoft, or if you're a consultant who preaches the adoption of Fabric, then of course you're going to make it look as good as possible and you're going to want to take people's money. But no, that thing is not ready for prime time. Next up, Elwood has another question. What's your take on cycling the error log in SQL Server? I like doing it weekly. I like doing it weekly just as part of an agent job, just so that if I have to go back and open an agent error log, it doesn't take absolutely forever to open it. But weekly is fine for me. TalkTick asks, could you please share a bit more about the NUMA poison weight? It appears in the results of SP Blitz, and I'm curious whether I should reach out to the VM team regarding the SQL Server setup. Yeah, whenever you're looking at SP Blitz, there's a column that says URL. Copy paste that into your web browser, and there's much more information about that particular error. Now, if you read what I've written and you're like, Brent, that's not enough, then that's the point where you would hire me. But I want to get your problem solved for free without, and this is the honest truth, I don't want you paying me if I can solve your problems for free. Now, if you're like, Brent, I don't know how to read, and I need you to read the words out loud to me, no problem, you can hire me for that. But I am not going to read you what I wrote out loud for free, and I hope that that's fair. I don't give a damn if it's fair or not. Next up, My Tea Got Cold says, what is the biggest database that you've seen on Standard Edition that could manage a weekly check DB? I don't know offhand, because anytime that you run into problems running CheckDB in a performance window that works for you, since SQL Server 2019 came out, your software assurance licensing includes a free replica for disaster recovery. It includes a free replica for high availability. And the licensing specifically calls out that you can run CheckDB and backups on those replicas. So that's where you start offloading your CheckDB somewhere else in order to minimize performance problems. I can tell you I have a client running 10 terabytes of data on a single Standard Edition instance. Now, it's because It's very point query driven, like queries are. Whoopsie daisy, there goes my phone. It's very point query driven, like the queries are asking for specific rows, saying give me, you know, this row from the table. And there's not a lot of bulk loads, there's not a lot of reporting, so it works out fine for them. It's doable, but you know, it depends on your workloads, of course. I also have clients who have 200 gigs of data on Enterprise Edition, and they have a hard time with performance because their queries and indexes are so bad. You know, so it's not about the size. It's about how you use it. Isn't that right? You use it very well, even though you have a 80-horsepower engine. Oh, my God. Oh, great. Norwegian is sending me another cruise. Oh, wow. Oh, golly, I get a free cruise again. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, I got to go follow up with them. Well, we're not going to spend too much time here on this Office Hours, ladies and gentlemen, because I don't know why Norwegian would be giving me a free cruise. That's a little odd. Well, I guess I spent a lot on Norwegian this year. Let's see here. What do we got next? What's next on the voted? That's really interesting. Rojo says, T-SQL is written in islands in my company. Oh, that's a neat way of thinking of it. This is reports, C-sharp code, devs. Where is the proper placement of the poor old database administrator who has to find their bad queries? Should we put them in the front like a traffic cop or in the end like a safety net of bad performance in prod? This seems very tricky either way. Okay, what you really have there is two separate questions. One is, who does the DBA report to? If your goal as a database administrator is to do performance tuning, if you're like your main job duty is performance tuning, because there's two kinds of DBAs. There's like the uptime DBAs and the performance tuning DBAs, and there's the kind who try to do both, and they're not very good at it. But if you're a performance tuning DBA, because you said you have to find the bad queries, I find that it's most helpful if that person reports to whoever pays the licensing and hosting costs for the server, because it's that DBA's job goal to keep the licensing and hosting costs down while making performance fast. Because it's real easy to keep your hardware and licensing costs down by simply dropping it to a 4-core, 8 gig of RAM instance, but that doesn't make the queries fast. You got to do both of those at the same time. So by putting them under the purvey or under the hierarchy of the person who pays the licensing fees, that makes sure that they're focused on that. Whereas if they report to the development team, the development team is going to subdue them for, you know, subvert them into doing all kinds of other stuff like building new features for an app, because that's what's more important to them. The other part of your question is, when does the DBA get involved? Do they get involved when the queries are being written in the beginning of the application lifecycle? Or do they get involved at the end after the apps are already deployed and it's in production and you got to go start doing some tuning there? If you're a good, diligent tech professional, you probably want, or you think you want, to be involved at the beginning. You probably think that you want to help shepherd the app into making good decisions. But if you're understaffed, you're not going to be able to keep up with the developers slinging code. You're going to become a bottleneck for them. You're going to get a reputation for saying no all the time. So for me, I really kind of prefer letting them sling whatever code they want, and then I'll come in afterwards only for the ugliest stuff and try to help them fix the ugliest stuff. Because after all, a lot of stuff that we build, customers never use. A lot of the features that we build, we can't predict what customers are going to latch onto, what they're going to have a good time with. So we end up just having to, I wouldn't want to waste time performance tuning something that never becomes popular or something that we have to rewrite anyway because the customers want to use it differently. So that's why I'm more of a fan of being on the back end. Is that an appropriate thing to say? I'm not sure if I want to be on that, be known for that there. Let's see here. Next up. This is really good. Joseph says, a table in SQL Server suddenly lost data What's the simplest way to see the history of what happened to that table? Does the transaction log show it? And are there any other reliable ways to check what changed? Oh, Joseph, I used to work for Quest Software a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And before I worked for Quest, I had that same question. I was like, there's got to be a way to use a transaction log and figure it out. And I never got the time to work on it until I worked for Quest. And when I went to work for Quest, they had a really cool product that would read transaction logs. And there are several vendors that at the time had transaction log reading products, although I don't see a lot today, and you'll know why here in a minute. And I was like, okay, so how does this work? And so the way that it has to work is you have to go all the way back to the beginning of the transaction log, at like the full backup point, and then all the transaction log forward. And you have to read through all of it in order to see what happened to a given table, because it could have happened at any time. Who knows when it happened? Even when you find the log records that relate to that table, even when you show the delete table or the alter statement table, you know what it doesn't show? The login. It doesn't show where the login was coming from. Because see, the transaction log is tuned to write as quickly as possible, and you wouldn't want it writing the login, the IP address, all those kinds of things with every statement that somebody did, with every log row that was affected. You would only want to log that stuff when they first log in, and then you just keep referring to the same session number. That's exactly how the transaction log works. So you have to read through the whole thing in order, you know, serially from start to finish, and then load it into some kind of queryable format. And then to make matters worse, Microsoft has changed, I mean, not worse, this is fine. Microsoft's in their purview to do this, but Microsoft changed the transaction log format over time to accommodate for new features. All the log reader products that I know about that performed any good are all gone now, just because there weren't a lot of people who wanted to pay for those kinds of products, let alone to keep up with the maintenance of trying to reverse engineer SQL Server's log format, because it's not something that they've ever published publicly. You had to reverse engineer it. So it sounds like a really easy thing to do, but in actuality, because the transaction log is undocumented and because it only stores a limited amount of information each time, it's a real pain in the rear. I have seen a couple of third-party products that purport to read the log before you pay for them, do a demo of them and try to do a bunch of transactions in a demo database like Stack Overflow, then attach the database and read the log and watch how long it takes and how buggy the program is, because they're pretty freaking bad. Let's see here. Let's find one other interesting one. I like SQL Server says, hola muchacho, what is your favorite new feature of SQL Server 2025 and why? And this person says, I'm psyched about the column store improvements and the persisted stats for secondaries. This is such a good question. For me, I think the optional parameter plan optimization is pretty doggone cool. Over the last few versions, 2019, 2022, and 2025, Microsoft has continually paid down technical debt involving parameter sniffing and reusable plans. And I've had like three clients in the last month where I've said, you know what the real answer for your problems is to get to 2025 as quickly as possible. You don't usually hear me say that about new versions, but between Query Store being really good, SQL Server using Query Store to persist stuff about plans, parameter-sensitive plan optimization being less harmful these days, adaptive memory grants being pretty good and storing their stuff inside of Query Store, and optional parameter plan optimization, OPPO, I'm down with OPP. Oh, yeah, you know, Brent. Oh, that's kind of where I'm at there. I've thought even about recording training classes on Query Store because I'm so excited about it. But at the same time, I still feel like I don't I'm not qualified to because I haven't managed it in production. So I still keep linking people to Aaron Stellato's training classes on Pluralsight, even though Query Store has changed a lot, although the GUI is still terrible. Yeah, that's about it. Well, I should go follow up with Norwegian and find out what this free cruise is. I am going to be on the road a bunch. Well, not necessarily this road, but I'm going to get out today and do some more driving. I'm going to go through car withdrawal because shortly I leave for China. I'm going to go to China, meet up with Eve and her family. We're going to see Beijing, Shanghai, and Eve's hometown in Zhengzhou. Spend a couple of weeks over in China, then do Osaka, Kyoto, and Tokyo again. We love those. We're spending more time in them in late December, early January. So this will be the last office hours for a while from Vegas, or from the United States, and then the next ones will be from lands far away. So hopefully y'all had a good time, learned something. I will see y'all on the next office hours. You know, I should show you something else, because there's something else that's cool over here. So this, I'm also really nearby something called Seven Magic Mountains. So Seven Magic Mountains is this sculpture. You'll Google for it. Google for Seven Magic Mountains and you'll see it. That's pretty cool. Have a good one.